Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. Ray is going to join us shortly, working on some computer difficulty. But we have two guests here today. One, you remember him as the conquering champion from Canada for most of the 2019 season, which seems like 20 years ago with COVID. Jim Vessel joins us on the show.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good to have you back, Jim. And a special guest, he was the tournament organizer for the Clutch City GT and also making a name for himself as part of Team Texas, Colin McDade.
Eric, thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much, guys. So as we're waiting for Ray here, we wanted to dive into those of us who got up at the crack of dawn on Saturday morning. GW kind of gave us a glimpse of the future beyond Codex Space Marines. And like a good X-Files episode, I'm left with more questions than answers. So you guys are more experienced players than I am. So I thought, explain to me, what is this new terrain, this new campaign book, Warzone Caradon?
Yeah, it's interesting because I thought that was a Space Marine Legion. Yeah, I'm getting confused.
Yeah, it's a Space Sharks, right?
A space Sharks, but yeah, it's a very weird name. I think, I guess it looks like they're trying to get back into these campaign supplements, which I do think is a great thing. Like, I did really enjoy Vigilus when it came out, and I did enjoy Psychic Awakening for the most part. I think there's some obviously larger issues with that release, but I think the thing that, and not to kind of get too down on it too quickly, I know with 8th edition, the release there, I don't think they actually, I think they had almost released every army book before starting to roll up the campaign books. So their first year and a half was really focused on putting out army books. And so it feels really weird that with only like about a half dozen of like 24 faction books out, we're already switching focus to campaigns and then already releasing rules for books that are either not out yet or are coming out basically alongside these campaign books. So I'm just not really sure. And, where they're going with this. And the one thing that I would ask is, I recall with, a big thing with Psychic Awakening is once your codex comes out, basically your Psychic Awakening rules are invalid. So I'm really curious if, like, for, say, Adeptus Mechanicus and Imperial Knights, when they're released down the road, say in 6 months, if their rules are going to be invalidated. Or maybe we see those books right away after the Dark Angels and Drakari books. So it's very confusing kind of their release schedule right now, and I'm not really sure how to feel about it.
Colin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Jim. I mean, this kind of feels like it's Vigilus 2 Electric Boogaloo almost with the kind of campaign format. But it is interesting because they're releasing rules for factions like AdMech and Death Guard that aren't yet out yet. And as we all know, or at least I feel like some of us know this at least, that they release or they go to the books go to print like 4 months in advance. So like these rules are already like written up like 6+ months in advance. So I feel like they have to have written at least these rules in mind with the later faction releases, which this could also be a clue like, hey, maybe AdMech is going to come out in February after Drukhari in January. That's what I'm guessing. But it'll be interesting because, you know, like they said, hey, Vigilus is not approved for match play anymore. And Psychic Awakening has basically been invalidated for Space Marines. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of content we actually get for AdMech and Death Guard in their books. Like, is for AdMech just going to be a reprint of the old Vigilus rules since those aren't technically allowed for competitive play? Or if they'll even be allowed for competitive play at all? Because technically GW says Vigilus is allowed to be used, just not for competitive play. So it'll be interesting to see what the direction is. And I think this book will be really telling on how they're going to lead with campaign books in the future.
Right. And I think the other thing to kind of think about is they haven't really come out and say that there's rules for match play. Like they've said that there's rules. They've talked a lot about things like the Crusade rules. They've talked about missions, obviously. But they haven't really mentioned, you know, new units or, extra match play rules. So my guess, and this is just a theory, is that, obviously with the Rona, all of the army books, everything got pushed back, right? So I would assume that, you know, this book is not going to be up till looks like probably January, February, because it is coming out alongside the Dark Angels Drakari book. But Death Guard's going to be out in December. So that's going to be out before the supplement's out. And I assume Drakari will probably release alongside of it. And so I guess my real question is, you know, maybe originally those books, Drakari and Death Guard, would have been out, say, in like August this year or in September this year, and there would have been a nice big gap in between getting additional rules. I just think with the timing, it feels a little bit weird. And I'm really curious as well if we're going to match play rules, because all of a sudden, a book that literally just released, now you need two books. So for my death card, I'm going to need two books to play them. So it just doesn't feel good. Feels like a deal, like a day one DLC, basically, that you get in video games.
Ubisoft all over again.
Ray, you had a chance to join us. What do you think of this new book?
I think it's going to basically come down to a bunch of narrative stuff. I don't think we're going to see anything meant for competitive play out of it.
Right.
Yeah, I guess where I'm a little confused on, just going to throw my two cents in here, because right after it, they mentioned there is a Plague Purge mission pack, which has the Giant Crusade stamp of approval on it. So we know that's for narrative play, but this book doesn't. So that's where I'm confused. Is this matched? Are these extra rules? Didn't we already purge all the Vigilus rules out of the game? And many Chaos players are still upset by it. Just thoroughly confused. Exactly what does this mean? And other than, like I said, it hints at, are these, you know, Imperial Knights, Deptus Mechanicus right after Jukari now? Who knows?
If I was a betting man, I would bet as soon as I would bet they're the February codexes, because I'm gonna assume that their original intention was to have all four of those Omni books out and then release this. But I think they're trying to kind of compress the schedule to get caught up again, so that their 2021 release schedule isn't just kind of perpetually behind. And so it feels like the timing is weird. But obviously, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. And yeah, I do have a bit of a sour taste in my mouth from Vigilus as a Chaos player. Even with Psychic Awakening, you know, as the books are getting released, those rules are getting invalidated. My other kind of, and again, not to poo-poo on GW too much, but my other kind of complaint is the storyline for 9th edition has been really confusing, because they're calling it Indomitus, which is essentially the crusade that happened before the Plague War. So like in the timeline, the Indomitus Crusade is like in the past. And so my question is this set in the current timeline, or is this set during the Indominus Crusade? Is this actually going to move the timeline forward, which I thought was going to happen with the launch of 9th edition, but instead we've just been kind of rehashing. Like, it's just the timeline is just very convoluted right now, and it's not quite clear chronologically where all these like new mission books and campaigns.
They didn't state where this world, Karandra or whatever, is what sector it's located in, right?
They said that they're attacking the Forge World Metallica.
Okay.
And that, which I have to look at the galactic map and figure out where that is. But basically the Death Guard, and with Typhus, by the way, he's back, so it can stop the APB on him. He's attacking Metallica. The Adeptus Mechanicus and the Imperial Knights are there to defend it. And the Drukhari thought, let's take advantage of the chaos and distraction and do a couple raids.
Yeah, because I know the Death Guard like kind of attacked Ultramar and everything like pretty hard going into them. So I didn't know if it might have been near there, and it was like a precursor or aftermath of the Death Guard attacking like the Ultramar system. Like that would kind of make sense to be a part or somewhere along that part of the timeline.
I just looked it up while you were chatting. So this is from Codex 4th Edition Orcs and White Dwarf 94, so these might be out of date, the sources, but the system is within the Segmentum Ultima, and it used to be an orc. It says it's an orc pocket empire, so like I'm pretty sure this is out of date. but that's the last, like that's the only known inventions of this world in Fluff from Codex Orcs 4th Edition. So whether or not that's, they retconned it and it's now Forge World, and for the record, I think Metallica is the dumbest for Forge World. Like it's literally, I know GW loves the puns, but like it's kind of ridiculous.
I'm just surprised Lars hasn't sued GW yet. So,
well, they spelt it with one L instead of two. So that's okay.
There we go.
Not copyright infringement.
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, so you got rules for the Metal Militia, the Phantom Lord. How many other Metallica puns can I throw into this? Okay. The other big news, of course. So I have to admit it right now. Ray, you told me so. Codex Drukhari. So I've been finding every excuse to doubt this was ever going to happen. And we actually, this is what I get. I actually pre-recorded this show. I was going to dump it in the middle of the podcast tonight. Uh-huh. We have exclusive footage of them working on Codex Drukhari. Control C, Control V. And literally when Eddie Eccles on the stream says, it's not just a cut and paste of the previous one. It's a totally revamped codex. And I was like, they listen to our damn podcast. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's I mean, I'm happy that we're getting a Xenos Codex. I think as everything else in Space Marines, whether Chaos or basically up to this point, besides Necrons, I think hopefully they start alternating that, because will Dark Angels be the last pure Space Marine Codex at this point, outside of the original founding chapters? So they'll be, all of them will be, have been out by once Dark Angels is out, right?
Well, Jim, they're technically all supplements. We've only actually had one Space Marine Codex.
Okay, you know what I'm saying. Like, I don't imagine them re-releasing the six of the other, like, the six Codex compliant chapters right away. I assume they're going to probably throw in some other army books, hopefully. But I don't know. It seems like there's still quite, like, there's quite a few Space Marine releases that we've seen that have not been out yet.
Yeah, heavy Intercessors have not come out yet either.
So
yeah, I'm looking forward to those getting on the table anytime soon.
A guy at my event actually ran 15 or 20 of them. He took aggressors and then put 3D printed some upscaled intercessor arms and put them on them.
Huh. Well, that's inventive.
That's basically all they are. They're basically just aggressors with bigger intercessor rifles.
Wow. So looking at this, Nutrikari. So as they say here, more attacks, higher damage, lethal combat across the board, which is something they desperately needed. I've been trying to make them work, and basically my games are play whack-a-mole with objectives, and I usually end up with three or four models at the end of the game, and hopefully I've amassed enough primary points to win. So interesting. If you ask Skari, he's super excited, but then Skari and I are all polar opposites about this. He's the eternal optimist, and I can find a gray clown behind every silver lining. So little things they say, they're changing the raiding party rules, which is the whole take three patrols and doesn't cost you any command points. That worked pretty well. Why are you messing with it? Yeah, you pay the troop tax, but it's not that bad. The new incubi look great. I don't know what your guys' thoughts on those.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny, like, oh, hey, they're like, oh, hey, we increased them to two damage. But that's after you made all the really good Space Marine stuff have three wounds. And let's not forget the Apothecary Aura. So I was kind of like, what's the point?
Well, that's what they did in Psychic Awakenings. They gave us to Dark Technomancers, and then all the aggressors came out at three wounds, and the Terminators went up. I was like, oh, God, all right, forget it.
I am a little confused by the profile that they previewed, though, because it has weapon options of demiclaves and claves, but like they can't actually take demiclaves. There's no option to actually do that. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. I don't know if maybe there's like another part of the data sheet I'm missing here. But
I thought the demiclaves were wielded by the sergeant.
Yeah, it just says every model is equipped with a clave. So yeah. and then it has a demiclave. Yeah, so it's very confusing, but. I think ultimately it'll really come down to points. In this edition, things like the incubi, like still T3, 3+ save, one wound, like, and you can only take a unit of 10. So, I mean, that's not that hard to pick up. Like a five like intercessors will do that with like bolters. So it's really it's gonna be really interesting to see what they give the Drukhari to keep them resilient, because I think that is really what this edition's about. So. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So a couple things. So a couple things I'll add in there. Absolutely. The bottom half of this data sheet is missing. So yeah, the Clavex has the option to take the demiclave. I did notice the Clavex is now up to two wounds, but yay, one two wound model in this unit. Jim, your point's well taken. My bigger concern, weapon skill two. Huh. What happened to power from pain? Are you guys changing that? Because generally, incubi had power from pain, and they were weapon skill 2 from turn 3 on. Ah, what's going on here? So, getting a little nervous. What changes are coming? And at least we're getting a new book. I'm excited. Nervous. Not sure what to buy at this point, but I'll try and paint everything so I'm ready to go on day one.
It is kind of interesting, though. They're kind of following roughly the same kind of 8th edition release schedule, because if y'all remember in 8th edition, I believe Drukhari was one of the really early Xenos Codexes too, I think, right?
Yes, they were. Yeah,
they are until you. Except the fact that Space Wolves, I think, were one of the last Marine books. It took them a good year and a half to get Space Wolves and Blood Angels. I think they came quite late. I'm still holding out hope I'll get a second Chaos Space Marine Codex in less than a year, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't trust GW enough to give me what I want.
It's just a weird thing, because I think of because when I put my business hat on, I mean, I get why they put the Space Marines first, because you could easily update 35% of the meta with one book. So if you're going to pick a Xenos Codex, as much as I love, because it's my army, roughly 4% of the meta plays Drukhari. You should have done like Tyranids or Orcs or something like that. It's supposed to get a, you know, larger cross section covered, but I don't know. We'll figure it out. Yeah, I'm just glad that we didn't get a get relegated to an Eldari Codex with supplements. So,
oh, that'd be weird.
Yeah,
I really wish we could be a fly on the wall in like the GW corporate planning meetings on like who gets books, who gets models, and when, because it's sometimes it feels like it's completely outside of like Space Marines are the one constant, but everything else it seems completely like nonsensical a lot of the times.
Well, you know, they just take one of those multi-sided dice, side has a faction, they just roll to see which one comes out next.
I need one of those dice. All right, so last hint of the day was of course Dark Angels. So a couple of hints, not a whole lot of information. So any thoughts on this one, gentlemen?
I'm curious if they change Inner Circle at all. I feel like they probably aren't, though. The free transhuman and all the Deathwing Inner Circle stuff is pretty crazy, but I doubt that gets changed because they probably were like, oh, let's try this out. And then they probably already have it printed the same way in the codex. So I don't see how they change much of what is out currently, other than adding in a lot of the strats that were in their Psychic Awakening book or changing them somewhat. I mean, we might see some new strats, I'm guessing, based off the Death Watch, Blood Angel, and Space Wolf supplements.
Yeah, I think the cool part is knowing that Deathwing and Ravenwing detachments will get OBSEC on some of their units. So being able to do like an all Deathwing or all Ravenwing army, I think is cool. That's like, I always saw it something that was a bit of a missed opportunity because of the lack of OBSEC. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I will say on a side note, all the like wasted effort on like crap with like the Fallen is just, I just hate it. Like in Chaos Space Marines, it's the same. Like it's like, oh, we're going to give the create the Fallen and Cypher, and then they do it in Dark Angels. And it's just like, it never goes anywhere. And it feels like, I don't know. It just feels like this is very like specific. No one takes Fallen anyways. So like why are you wasting? Like no one's ever taken Fallen. But yeah, let's give you guys a bunch of rolls against the Fallen. So it's like, okay, so unless you guys are going to make Fallen actually good and like really good, then you're kind of just wasting like design brain on this kinds of stuff.
Well, at least it seems they're keeping it towards Crusade. That being said, my Chaos Space Marine army is entirely Fallen themed. So yeah, it's just, yeah, it doesn't do much. Actually, most of the time I played as Alpha Legion anyway, but that's like whatever. It's, yeah, there's always this random objective that you need to get, and it never, yeah, unless you make the actual Fallen good, which I don't think they will anytime soon, because you would get, I don't know, we'll see. Maybe they'll come out with some dual kits with this release. I doubt it. So that was all your 40k for the release party. Any of the other non-40k stuff catch your guys' eye a little bit?
What's his face? Sigvald, the new Sigvald is brilliant. He's definitely going to convert him into some sort of Demon Prince Chaos dude. He's so much bigger now. Like they did like, it's hard to tell because they don't have him here, but I think he's on like a 60 mil base now. Like he's massive. So I think I'm going to definitely pick that model up just for 40k and do some, maybe turn him into like a Chaos Lord of some kind or something. But other than that, I mean, it's, yeah, don't really care about the rest. The Slaanesh stuff is cool.
Well, yeah, I like seeing the AOS stuff. It's always kind of neat seeing them change things around because they do the big changes in that game. You don't really see so much of that in 40k with the exception of the big turnaround we saw with Necrons. And even that wasn't quite the same. I think other than that, it was just kind of okay moving on, especially when right smack in the middle, they just sat and talked about the Lord of the Rings or the Middle Earth game. Like, I don't really care about this. Why couldn't you just save this for last?
You know, those movies came out almost 20 years ago. I think 2001 was Fellowship.
No way. Has it really been that long?
Yeah. No. So it's crazy how they're still milking it, I guess. I was sure that the game would be kind of like canceled by this point, but I guess there must be a crowd out there for it.
All of like two people that just continuously buy everything.
You know, the sad part is there is a large group at Nova. There's like a 40 person event for Middle Earth game. I was like baffling to watch, but okay.
Probably like the whole community right there.
It probably is.
Yeah,
apparently it's a lot more popular in the UK, from what I've been told.
You know, that might be true. So I'll hold my reservation until we find out. So it just, yeah, blows my mind. Yeah, the Vansar stuff I thought was interesting with the clear plastic on their four shields. Love to see that incorporate itself into some Tau units. That look really cool.
Yeah, one of my friends that plays AdMech, he was like, man, if I'd seen those models earlier, I would build my Skitarii Raiders as the Silver Hounds and then use the leftover bits on those Vansar models. Because if you cut them down to like the same height as the Raiders, they'd look as pretty cool like Cerberus Raider conversions.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
The one thing I will say, though, is as we saw with the Necron Green Rods, like everyone's super hype on them, but then they don't really age well. So we'll see in like 5 years if everyone's still hyping up like the plastic. Because I remember when the Green Rods came out, everyone was like losing their minds on how cool it was. And now it's like, get rid of these.
Yeah, my Ring Pop monoliths. Yep, those are terrible. Yeah. So. And then the Myrmidesh Painbringers. I keep looking at those going like, I can make noise marines out of them. I just don't know how.
People keep hinting there's a Emperor's Children / Slaanesh Chaos book coming out, and that Fulgrim's going to come out this year, because they were saying with that, I think that Photoshop came out of Sigvald on top of Marathi.
Yes.
as a Demon Fulgrim.
Yeah, Ray sent that to me. Yes. Clever bastards on the internet.
I wonder if enough people, like, I think they've been converting and photoshopping Demon Fulgrims for like the last year and a half. So I wonder if enough people do it for long enough, GW will find that.
Do not know. But anyway, that's your news for the week. Yes, I am disappointed. No Warcry this week. So yeah. Oh, well.
Darn.
Darn. Jim's had to hear my ranting of Warcry way too many times. So anyway, so interesting to see some new product coming down the pike. As we talked a little bit about, we're still waiting for heavy intercessors and some of the other products still promised from previous previews. So someday soon, we hope. And hopefully, if I hear your allocation one more time, my poor local game store, hopefully this will actually show up on the shelf so we can buy it. But nonetheless, there's actually been some tournament action. We talked about this event last week. And Colin, you are the TO of that event. So right after the break, we'll get it to dive deep into the Clutch City GT.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the Mad Men of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. All right, welcome back from the break. As mentioned, Colin's here. He ran the Clutch City GT, and we had a couple questions about not only the event, but also his unique take on the terrain and making it one of the first true 9th edition terrain setups for a GT event. So, Colin, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Eric. I'm glad to be here and happy to talk about my event.
So one question that came up quite a bit, well, where's the name come from? How does it become the Clutch City GT?
So back in the 90s, with Akeem Olajuwon and the Rockets, when they won the national championship back in the 90s, the whole term was like Clutch City, for Houston. And so I'm not Clutch City used to be a GT back in 2015. So I'm not technically the original organizer of it. Two of my friends who don't really play 40K much at all, really anymore, they were the original organizers of it. And they were also two of the people that really got me into competitive 40K. So when I decided to become a TO for a GT or to run a GT, I asked them, I was like, hey guys, like y'all are the people who like helped get me into competitive 40K. is it okay for me to use the same name? And they're like, yeah, of course. So that's the reason for the name, I guess, and a little bit of backstory on it.
That's really cool that they continue traditions like that, because there's some very venerable tournaments, and it's always like maybe one or two guys like running the whole thing. So you hate to see them kind of fall by the wayside when life kind of takes over. So it's good to hear that. And for those who have a tough time following the whole, who's Akeem Olajuwon? No, he's not Nigerian prince. That's an NBA reference. Google it. So go from there. So you're running an event. Well, we're going to skip all the COVID stuff, but you know, you still got to get terrain on the table. And there's been a lot of confusion over what ninth edition terrain should look like. So tell me your thought process and how you came to the conclusions that you did for your event.
So I guess it's kind of a funny story. I actually started this whole terrain endeavor as a help to another TO in Houston to make terrain for the event, because we didn't really have enough terrain for the last Houston event. And the whole project was actually as a project of like, hey, like, let's make Houston have the best terrain in the state and or country, or as best as possible. And the guy didn't want to go through with it. So I was like, okay, well, these designs are still cool, so why not just run my own event with it? Because we already have the designs made up and everything. So I decided to go ahead and go for it. It's kind of interesting. Goonhammer had an article a while back about the turn one winning percentage. I think it was like, what, like 7-9%? I think something crazy like that. That was supposed to be like really high. But then they go on to the article with example style layouts of the terrain. And I'm looking at this and going, okay, well, 2 out of 3 example layouts had 8 pieces of terrain, and the one that had 12 on it was just 12 ruins. And I was like, okay, well, this doesn't seem like a whole lot of terrain to me. And then when you go look in the rule book, there's what, like 10 different types of terrain that do different things now. So I was thinking like, okay, well, they're actually giving us decent terrain rules as compared to 8th edition, where there really wasn't anything besides ruin, and nothing really did anything. And then when you go look at the 9th edition rules, every terrain piece actually does something a little bit differently, and they affect the battlefield in a different way. So now you can add in different elements into the battlefield that actually players can actually have some real tactical advantage and use to their army to actually factor in terrain.
So we need to figure it out, okay, balance-wise, because one thing I was peppering you with questions online before this, in terms of how many pieces of terrain go in each deployment zone and all that. What was some of your thought process with that?
So, interesting way I did it. I did it a little differently than what I've ever seen done before. My tournament actually had the layout change every round of the event, which is kind of like how LVO did it with their top 100 tables last year, where they had like, oh, if you roll up this deployment, the terrain looks like this. Well, I took it kind of a step further. I actually did that with every table at the event, and the terrain actually changed according to what mission you're playing, because you know, like, the layouts are now set. And so it was kind of, I didn't release it before the event actually happened, so players didn't know what mission they were playing or what the terrain layout would be until they got to the table at that round, which I thought was a kind of new innovative way to do it. No one actually, everyone said they liked it. I didn't hear anyone tell me that they didn't like that way of doing it. And I kind of thought it kept a way of keeping everyone on equal footing, I guess, so to speak.
As a TO, one of the things I always, especially an old school TO, I'm used to the preset terrain and balance tables, and trying to find the perfect layout for every deployment zone has been vexing. So the fact that the idea of switching it by deployment zone, especially because now each mission, you know what deployment zones you're going to have based on which missions you've chosen for the event, it makes it a little bit easier to predict.
Exactly. So. And then the other thing, I didn't explicitly state it, but because both players are having to move around the terrain each game, that kind of invites the conversation of going over, hey, like, where should this terrain be? Or how do you want to play this? If there's anything that's, I guess, not clearly stated in the rule book. So I guess it kind of helps invite that conversation, even though terrain's pretty clearly defined in the rulebook as opposed to last edition. That was actually something I did before the event. I went over, since every table has the same pieces of terrain, it was really easy for me to go over the list of terrain and say like, hey, this is what this is, and so on and so forth. And kind of to go back to your original question about regards to layout and what to pick, one of the pieces on my terrain, it's a U-shaped ruin, which people initially were against. They're like, oh, this feels like a magic box to me. It looks like a magic box to me because what it is, it's a three-walled ruin, but it's not, it doesn't have a lid on it. So it's not technically a magic box, but the whole point of why that piece of terrain is there is so people can actually hide turn one. Because, you know, people were, a lot of complaints that we'd been hearing is saying, oh, well, there's nowhere to hide turn one, or I just get blown off the table turn one. And that piece of terrain is there for that purpose, to give you a place to actually hide some key elements and say, hey, I don't want this stuff to die turn one. So to kind of help mitigate that whole 7 to 9% differential of whoever's going first is going to win the game, I guess, so to speak.
Good to know. So if you're following at home while listening to this, you can check out our Facebook page. We have pictures of this terrain, especially two tournaments we're going to talk about. Collins is the red and black objective markers. So the one on the right-hand side, if you're looking at our Facebook page. We'll be talking about the other tournament in a second. Jim, you had some comments about this terrain as well.
Yeah, I think, terrain is like, I don't think we'll ever have an edition of 40K where we don't talk about terrain, or where there isn't drama around terrain, or where there isn't lots of discussion around, you know, what the table should look like or what the right amount of terrain is. And so, you know, I think ultimately, a lot of times, and I think this was very prevalent in 8th edition, which was the terrain was really defined by the meta. And in that, good terrain was really defined by the meta. Let me rephrase that. What I mean by that is, you know, oftentimes we would want lots of ruins, things like magic boxes, lots of line of sight blocking, because it was such a shooting heavy meta. Also because of the way like a lot of us played ITC missions. Now with 9th edition, you got to ask, there isn't really the meta is don't die, stand on things. Killing is not as important. A lot of the lists that are doing well are really resilient and heavy on OBSEC. So the question is, in 8th edition, the train's goal was to kind of make sure that games didn't end too quickly and felt balanced. And so really that's like the kind of, that's our kind of North Star with 9th edition now. It's like, what kind of terrain and how much and where should it be sitting to create interesting games based on the meta that we're seeing, right? So I think with the examples that you posted, you know, I think in Colin's game, knowing that this is an objective meta where standing on multiple objectives is a big part of the game, you know, I like the fact that there's a cost to that. It's not basically, I just hide a unit of 10 cultists in the back and then I never have to worry about them again because my opponent has no non-line of sight shooting, right? Whereas the other table almost feels like a return to 8th edition where you could just kind of hide lots of things and then everyone just kind of fights over one objective. Like, I'm sure you guys remember the 8th edition games where both players would have two objectives or one objective, and then the whole game was based around a single objective, essentially. I think what I do like about 9th edition, it feels like, especially with the strategic reserve rules, the game, even though it's a smaller table, it feels like it plays on bigger, like it plays across the table more, and any objective is always kind of threatened, I guess. And so I like the idea that there is a cost to being on objectives. And I think that's ultimately the question that TOs have to ask, or players as well, is should there be a cost for a unit to stand on an objective? So you're going to plant your flag on that objective. Should you be able to do that kind of without any consequence, or should there be consequences? And I think there should, personally. Now, does that mean there should be no terrain around objectives? No. But I think what that means is it should put you in slightly higher danger than just sitting in a back corner with, in a ruin or in a magic box and never moving the whole game. And there's many games in 8th edition that I did that, where I'd start a unit of cultists in a magic box with an inferior objective and literally never touched my models the whole game. And I like that in 9th edition, that's not as possible.
You brought up a key point there, Jim, the cost of holding an objective, the idea that you also have the actions on top of it. So the idea is that you're foregoing shooting and the psychic phase as well. So one of the things that's still kind of a lingering, and Colin, you can please comment on this as well. Ruins with or without windows, you know, that whole idea of, you know, line of sight blocking versus the much confused, obscured rule that ruins have. So the idea that you could hide behind ruins, but don't hide in the ruin type thing. Does that kind of go back to the, we can hide behind the ruin and still hold on to objective all game?
Yeah, that kind of goes back to the whole stigma of if you liked magic boxes or not. So it's kind of interesting. On my example picture of terrain that y'all have, You'll notice that there's actually examples of both. The quote unquote, the Houston News is what I like to call them. They don't have anything cut out, so they're solid walls, so you can hide in your deployment zone. Whereas the middle ruins actually have windows. Now they're still obscuring because they're over 5 inches tall, but if you touch them or get in the base area of them, you can be seen. And then the other small ruins, I think some of them were like mixed. I think some of them we had some windows cut out, and then the other ones didn't. To a point where like you could hide smaller models behind them, but not bigger models.
I got to geek out for a second on the terrain building part. How big are your footprints about?
For which piece?
The middle ruins, for example.
They're like, I think they're roughly around the size of the Nova big L's, I think. I can't remember the exact dimensions off the top of my head.
Yeah, they're big because they're almost 12 by 12, or you think they're probably closer to like the ITC ones are 9-inch by 9-inch L's?
Well, they're actually L's. They're not like a square on the sizes. So like one side is longer than the other one by a good bit.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact dimension.
Oh, it's fine. It's like I said, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to the terrain part. And that's one of the things that's
other folks. The thing I will tell you this about my terrain, the woods that I have on my tables, they're the exact dimensions of the old GW forests that they used to make. And the crates that are on the table, they are actually the same dimensions as the LVO hills that they'll have on their at frontline events.
Got it. Okay, cool. That's actually good to know because those hills are huge from the LVO ones because they're like 12 inches long. I was like, wow, this glad I didn't bring a rhino. So
right.
And Colin, I just had a question. So obviously a big part of the 19th edition terrain rules is the whole touching or not touching. So I noticed that your terrain it's quite thin as far as like the buildings, and then very like the middle ones don't have bases. So were you playing with a rule where within an inch was touching, or did they have to physically be touching the cardboard, or how did you kind of play the bases? Because there is a big debate right now on whether or not just whether or not, but also how we should be basing things like ruins, things like trees and forests to kind of define exactly where that terrain is. So what are your thoughts on that?
So the way we played it at my event, the way I ruled it is I said corner to corner is the base of the ruin. And as a good point you brought up, Jim, if you look in the actual big rule book under step 6, I believe, of setting up the battlefield and everything, it says terrain features cannot be set up on top of objective markers. So I'm sure y'all have both been to tournaments where they have ruins on giant bases, which actually one of the tournaments that I've gone to this year was kind of like that. The bases on the ruins were so big that on the 6 objective missions, we almost couldn't find places to put all the terrain pieces on the board because they're all so giant, big bases in a place where it would actually make it to where the game was good or not. I think one of the missions I actually played at that event, we had to put them in such awkward spaces that you pretty much couldn't hide whatsoever in your deployment zone because of how we had to place the terrain in regards to the objectives.
So I'm guessing those probably big ones are probably relics from 5th edition. So they're probably like 12 inch by 12 inch floor tiles they probably used to make those.
Yeah, they were really big. And then like the same thing with like those giant hills that a lot of events have.
Oh, those things are, yeah. And they're like
pyramids almost. And like hills don't actually do anything in the game. Yeah, they block line of sight, but when they're like pyramid shaped hills, they really don't block a whole lot of line of sight, and it's really impossible to really place any models on them.
Yeah, it's funny. My dad looked at my hills. He's a big model train guy, and he's like, "You're gonna slope that off a little bit." I'm like, "No, the models need to be flat so they can."
Right.
So they're basically vertical mesas in the middle of the table, and they don't look realistic, but they're very practical for playing the game. But so to your point, yeah, those GW hills, the old plastic ones, even the old plastic craters, another one, wobbly model syndrome from hell. So it was just unbelievable. I had another question. What was it?
I guess I should point out, not every table at my event looked like this exact one in the picture. I actually had 4 different design variants of this table. So the example in the picture is actually an Imperium version. I also had a Chaos version where all the symbols, instead of like the Fleur de Lis for Imperium, it was the Chaos Star on all the Chaos symbols. So like you had the crates with the Chaos Stars, you had all the ruins with the Chaos Stars. I also had a Tau one and then a Necron one as well. And then they're all painted slightly differently as well. So even though you were playing on the same layout every table, it didn't look visually the same. So visually it looks like you were playing on a different table, even though you still had the same layout.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. It looks like it's all laser cut. Is that something your friend has or you have?
Yes. He actually just got in a... We did this on a $500 laser, and he just got in, actually, the weekend of the GT. He got in a new $2,000 laser cutter. So we're ramping up production for the next one.
I am so jealous. I'm still hitting her with my foam wire cutter, doing everything by hand. So... Ray, you've been quiet. What do you think of the terrain?
I'm kind of in the middle. I know I've seen some people on our coast express that they prefer one to the other. I think some armies are obviously going to want the one over the other, depending on whether they're melee or they like to shoot.
It's funny you say that, because the reason why I have that other picture, and that other one is from one of the Warzone events in Atlanta, and I apologize, we did report on it last week, and the name's eluding me at this point. But the reason why I brought it up is somebody was actually complaining about it. And it's like, well, he got pictures of it. And he plays an orc buggy list. And his concern was there was no room for any of his vehicles to pass through the terrain. And which I finally went like, wait a minute. And I reread the reachable rules. And he's absolutely right. Vehicles cannot go through woods. They can't go through a lot of the terrain on that table. So I kind of looked, yeah, if you played a buggy list or basically a vehicle list without a lot of fly, you're in a lot of trouble on that board.
Yeah, we actually had a guy with the Orca speed freak list come to my event actually, and he didn't invoice any complaints to me about it, for mine at least.
I was just gonna say I think it's funny. I think when we started seeing the rules previews for 9th edition, everyone was like, oh, it's gonna be vehicle heavy, everyone's gonna be having vehicles because there's no penalties. And literally between Eradicators and like a few terrain rolls, the meta is just like completely like the opposite. So I just think that's really funny. And then I will say, Colin, I do think the way that you organized as far as like having different tables, I think that is the best way to run an event. You know, it's kind of fairness aside, one thing I do hate is seeing the stream table when it's like the exact same table every time. Or if you're on the top table, playing the same table every time. So I think having, you know, I think the game really benefits from catering terrain to missions or new deployment types. I think it makes it a better game. I think that's like a really good habit that lots of TOs should really look into. And within reason, I mean, obviously you don't want to spend up 30 minutes each game setting up terrain, but there's probably some things you can do. And I think at the end of the day, like, I do like the idea. And you know, I think one of the things I like about 40K is that every event, every game, it's like the terrain is a little different, and it's really about figuring out that puzzle. And so I would hate to see us as a community go to a place where, you know, everyone's using very similar or identical tables. And that kind of was what happened with 8th edition, with it was just ruins and magic boxes. So I do really like how 9th has brought in a lot more variety in terrain. And I like that different events have different terrain. And different setups. And I think that's what kind of keeps the meta healthy. I think if we all kind of move towards a singular style of terrain, style of table, style of, setup, what's going to happen is the meta is also going to kind of, you're going to have optimal lists within those terrain types. And I think So I do really enjoy all the variety.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I'm not gonna say toot my horn here and say, hey, my terrain layout or my way of doing it's the best way to do it. But I completely agree with you. I think we just need to make sure we keep having variety, but also have a healthy amount as well, to where it's not detrimental to 40K as well. Because I'm sure y'all are in the same boat where either it's happened to you or one of your friends, like you'll get done with a round at a GT or major event, and either you or one of your friends will say, oh, I had a bad game, and you'll go like, oh, what happened? And they'll say, oh, I got Planet Bowling Ball, or I got screwed over by the terrain deployment. And I think that's one of the things that organizers really need to avoid, because, you know, like, the average player is not there to try to win the event. They're there to have a good time. And I think adequate or above adequate terrain is really part of the key thing here that makes sure that your event's successful.
So one last question. We're running low on time here, but looking at the top three finishers from your event, you had Michael DeHeos with Harlequins, Clifton Miracle Russell with Gene Steeler Cult, and then Colin Coons with Adeptus Custodes. Three very different armies. Tell me a little bit how each army fared with the terrain laid out.
I guess going into the top, before we had the last two rounds and going in, we actually had two undefeated Gene Stealer Cult players round four, plus the Harlequin player and an Ultramarine player. So not even talking about the final three lists, but I want to talk about those specifically because we had a four Gene Stealer Cult type list playing, going undefeated in round four, as well as a Ridge Runner spam Gene Stealer Cult list going in round four. And then, as y'all know, Harlequins have a lot of vehicles and fast moving stuff. And then we also had Ultramarines, who the Ultramarine player, he had two Redemptor Dreadnoughts, a Razorback of all things, plus a lot of infantry. So we actually had a surprisingly amount diverse unit types going into round four with the list that were undefeated at that point. So, Harlequins, they're going to survive in any terrain layout because most of their rules actually let them ignore terrain for the most part. So they're going to be fine regardless. I wasn't surprised about that. The Gene Stealer Cult, I guess, they can play either to their advantage or to their detriment, depending on how their opponent reacts to it. Since they can pop up anywhere, they can either use it to their advantage, which if you're a player playing against that list and you know how to use the terrain to your advantage, you can actually make it work in your favor to the detriment of the Gene Stealer Cult player. So that's kind of going back to what I was talking about with the player's tactical skill and using the terrain to their advantage, since different terrain does different things now. The Custodes player, I think he had a tough time going into it at first, but he kind of rose to the top. I didn't get to see his games as much because at that point I was kind of hovering more towards the top tables for the undefeated players. So I was trying to be more of an active judge on those tables, but he was running the double plane list with an Ares and the Orion. So I think he probably was kind of a skew list because I think he was really one of the only people there were flyers. So I don't think a whole lot of people planned for that. So I think that kind of helped him rise up, but he's also a pretty good player as well. So not to take anything away from
him. Sounds good. Well, appreciate you coming on and talking about your event, and I look forward to any other events you got coming up that you want to plug.
I'm actually planning to expand my event, Clutch City GT, to an 80 person major. I'm planning for it to be in the second weekend of March in Houston. I'm expanding my terrain. I'm actually, I've taken some suggestions from the players at the event. So I'm changing a couple things. I'm actually adding more terrain to each table. And I'm also adding in a couple variant layouts because, you know, it's kind of touching on what Jim said about not just sticking to one format for everything. So I think adding in a couple variant layouts while switching up what pieces are on the table somewhat, but also keeping it kind of the core theme to where, It'll give players a little more variety and a little more, not so much stagnation. So they're not expecting the exact same thing every time. So it's really more work for myself having to make up those mission packets with terrain layouts. But I think it's worth it for the players. So that's really it. Clutch City GT, second weekend of March 2021, pending. We're in a good spot with the pandemic and everything, so we can have it, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that. Never would have thought we'd be still talking about COVID-19 this late in the year, much less into next year already, but that's where we are. So,
well, I'll actually give y'all a good piece of hope. One of the players in Houston, he has some connections to some of the state emergency personnel, and they just had a meeting to where they are planning to have the first phase of vaccines come out mid-December to emergency response personnel and government type officials like that. So I think we're in a pretty good spot, actually. I don't think that's really a well-known topic yet, but since he has those breaking government news. Connections.
Yeah, you hear it here first. That is great news. Actually, it is. It's good to hear. All right. So let's make a quick transition on that good news. Normally, at this point in the show, we talk about all the events in the top list, but there were no GT-level events this past weekend. So let's jump right to the ITC top 10. So 10th place with 1,038 points, Mike Porter. 9th place, Goonhammer-famed Kyle Thompson with 1,046. A mere 6.63 points ahead of him is Johan Nicholson. And then even less of a slim lead for seventh place is Rune Steenbockers. I apologize, Rune, I mispronounced that. Sixth place, we've got Richard Nielsen. Fifth place, Ben Cherwin. Fourth place, Nick Vijay. Huh, who's this guy in third? Haven't heard of him before. It'd be none other than our guest here, Colin McDade. Congratulations with 1,086 points.
Thank you.
Second place, Ken Knox with 1,089, just a slim lead over our guest. And in first place, still holding on at 1,170, Dan Sammons is your top spot for the ITC at this current moment. So there we are. So just quick round. Jim, anything else that you'd like to promote while you're on the show?
No, you can follow me on Instagram at JimboV_paints. It's my painting account. And that's basically all I've been doing up in Canada because we have no events and I can't cross the border and I can't travel. So just been kind of painting for the last 7 months. I've just been painting Death Guard right now to get ready for the new book. And
Well, I definitely want to have you back for the Death Guard review. So definitely go through that. We'd love to have you for that. Colin, we'd love to have you back as well. We'll talk to you later in the year. How's that sound?
Thank you. Yeah, I'd be more than happy to come back on the show.
I'd appreciate it. Ray and I, of course, will be back next week as usual. We've got lots more to talk about. So in the meantime, thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review. It's been a while since we've asked for some reviews, so hit us up. We can't make the show better if we don't know what we're doing wrong. And Warhammer players, they know what's wrong. Tell us what we're doing. So in the meantime, thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week.